I'd like to call this meeting to order, please. The meeting of May 18th, 2010, Tompkins County Legislature will come to order. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag
of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call members, please. Mr. Proto?
Here.
Ms. Pryor?
Here.
Mr. Robison?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Present.
Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk is asked to be excused. Mr. Dennis will be arriving later this evening. Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
Ms. McAsey?
Here.
Present. Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
13 members present.
Thank you. And Peter gets the award for having come the longest distance to get here tonight. We're going to do a little bit of juggling today, tonight. But first, proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications around the desks.
I have two proclamations, and because the recipients are here, I'll read the proclamations in full. So Lisa Holmes, our Director of Office for the Aging, please come on up for the Older Americans Month proclamation. And I will read it, and then if you'd like to say a few words, that'd be great. Whereas Tompkins County is a community in which over 12,000 citizens aged 60 and over make their home, and whereas the older adults in Tompkins County are among our most treasured resources, united by historical experiences, strengthened by diversity, and interpreting events through varied perspectives and backgrounds to bring wisdom and insight into our community. And whereas increasing numbers of adults are reaching retirement age and remaining strong and active for longer than ever before. And whereas the older adults in Tompkins County deserve recognition for the contributions they've made and will continue to make to the culture, economy, and character of our community and our nation. And whereas our community can provide that recognition and respect by improving the quality of life for older Americans, by increasing their opportunities to remain active and engaged in community life, providing individualized services and with support systems to maintain the dignity, independence, and self-determination of older Americans as they age, and combating ageist attitudes by honoring their past, present, and future contributions. Now, therefore, I, Martha O. Robertson, Chair of the Tompkins County Legislature, do hereby proclaim May 2010 as Older Americans Month in Tompkins County, and urge every citizen to take time this month to honor our older adults and the professionals, family members, and volunteers who care for many of them. Our recognition and involvement of older Americans can enrich our entire community's quality of life. Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you. I'll keep it brief. I just wanted to honor the older adults that make up this community and are very great resources for our community and add a lot to our culture, our knowledge base, our very active and vibrant parts of our community, and to also to thank you for supporting the Office for the Aging. So that we can provide support and options for those older adults who need more assistance. And I will be looking forward to coming back to the legislature in August to give a more broad overview of the Office for the Aging and the services that we provide. But until then, thank you very much.
Thank you, Lucy. And Catherine Wedge, community educator with the Mental Health Association. Come on up. Whereas one in five Americans suffer with a mental illness, and whereas mental illness can strike anyone without regard to race, age, gender, or socioeconomic status, and whereas major depression affects approximately 15 million American adults, or 8% of the United States population in a given year, and whereas approximately 80% of people experiencing depression are not currently receiving treatment, and whereas 90% of people living with a serious mental illness are unemployed, and whereas, according to the National Institute of Mental Health, the strongest risk factor for suicide is depression, More than 30,000 Americans die by suicide annually, and more than 90% of them had a diagnosable mental illness, and on average, one suicide affecting 130 people. And whereas not all suicides can be prevented, but a majority can, there are a number of measures that can be taken at community levels to reduce the risk, including adequate prevention and treatment of depression, which can reduce suicide rates, as well as follow-up contact with those who have attempted suicide. Now, therefore, I, Martha Robertson, Chair of the Tompkins County Legislature, do hereby proclaim May 2010 as Mental Health Awareness Month in Tompkins County, and call upon all citizens to recognize that the mental health of individuals affects the whole community. Citizens should educate themselves about the signs and symptoms as well as the mental health needs of the members of this community and support legislation for mental health parity, which includes coverage for mental health disorders and better access to mental health checkups. Thank you, Catherine.
Thank you, Governor. I want to thank the legislature for, through the years, supporting mental health awareness, and treatment for mental illness. Tompkins County has a reputation throughout the state, and I dare say throughout the Northeast, as being a very supportive, encouraging county for mental health services. We at the Mental Health Association have been around since 1954. We're proud of that legacy, and we hope to be around for many more years to bring awareness of mental health needs to your attention. Thank you.
Thank you, Catherine. Now, what the juggling we're going to do is I'm going to ask Brian Robison to come up, legislator from Groton, before public privilege of the floor, to present our monthly Distinguished Youth Award. And the reason for that is I think that will help a little bit with some of our space problems in our terrible for the public space back there. So in the meantime, if anybody else has these blue forms, you still can pass those up and be in line for the for public privilege. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's my honor to do my first Distinguished Youth Award, and Martha is exactly right. You will see that when we get done with this, we tend to do things a little big in Groton, and space will certainly be freed up. This award was nominated by the principal of the high school, Barbara Case, and I've asked her to come up and assist me in giving out this award. So, Barbara, if you could come up, and do we know? Oh, there you are. Also, Dr. Brenda Myers, the superintendent, she's also present. I think she was looking for a little break from the budget stuff from today. Yeah, come on up. And we may be looking for a few pointers on how to do that, maybe around November or so. But without further ado, Barbara Case, I will tell you that Barbara Case is actually formerly little Barbie Satterley, who grew up right next door to me as we were growing up. Her older brothers were my age, and they took real good care of her. Her dad was actually a member of the legislature, the former Board of Representatives back in the late 70s and early 90s. So, Bart, please.
I told Brian I remembered coming here in third grade and swinging in his chair. It was so much fun when I got to come here. I have to say it's a great honor, and I'm extremely proud to have a room full all honoring students that I oversee and that I have a daily interaction with. I'd like to read the nomination letter that I submitted to Brian. It is with great pride and pleasure that I nominate the class council officers of the 9th and 10th grade classes from Groton High School for the Tompkins County Distinguished Youth Award. I nominate them to represent the classes of 2012 and 2013. I formally nominate, and if I could have the students stand up as well as I nominate them. Do you want them to come forward?
Hey, come on out.
Okay.
Actually, we've only got eight, so they can.
Okay. From the class of 2013, Joel Twitchell, who is president, Christopher Hinman, vice president, Donald Evener, treasurer, Samantha Rose, secretary. Class of 2012, Jenna Schufelt, president, Alan Quince, vice president, Nicholas Slocum, treasurer, and Jordan Twitchell, secretary. The freshman and sophomore classes chose to integrate a charity cause into their social event of the school year, the Cotillion. This was the first time students had agreed to have the focus of the semi-formal dance to something beyond themselves and their own interests. Their purpose was to raise awareness to breast cancer. One of the officers, Donnie Ebner, suggested the idea to the planning committee, and they immediately embraced it. The students began by incorporating their colors, black and pink, into the theme Starry Night, and they integrated black and pink awareness ribbons into their posters, tickets, decorations, and even the centerpiece cake. The classes also made awareness ribbons, sold them to raise money to donate to a charity, and most students wore the ribbons to the dance. Additionally, many students wore black and pink attire to the dance. These students also served as an inspiration to younger children as well. Once the word spread of their efforts, Groton Elementary School students began to support their cause. Ms. Turner, the school nurse, and Mrs. Levine's fourth grade classes began to make posters, created a display in the library of the elementary school, and sold the ribbons on behalf of the freshman and sophomore classes. These officers educated the student body by sharing statistics, talked about the seriousness of this public health issue, and took action to make a difference. These officers, by serving as role models for all students within Groton Central School District, exemplified student leaders with compassion and generosity, both characteristics of distinguished youth. Please accept my nomination as described above. I'm proud to say that they have raised $760.15 for breast cancer research and cures. The officers voted to donate the money to the National Breast Cancer Foundation Incorporated. I applaud their efforts, and I'm proud to say they are Groton High School students.
And obviously, I too am proud of, I take every opportunity to brag up the kids around Groton. I know my kids recently left Groton High School. I went there a few years ago, and I'm very proud of the school, very proud of the community. Barbara, I think I will give these to you so that hopefully you can put them in your office or something. Each class with the class officers receive a plaque, and I should note that our sponsors for this award do include Bangs Ambulance Service, ourselves at the Tompkins County Legislature, Cuga Radio Group, Purity Ice Cream, and A&B Awards and Engraving. One last thing, I'm very glad that these kids chose breast cancer as their recipient of the donation. On a personal note, my wife has a lot of breast cancer in her family, and we have a very dear friend who's currently going through treatment for breast cancer, and I'm just glad that that was it. But I'm proud of each of you kids, and congratulations on behalf of the legislature.
Yeah, sure. And if one or two of the students wants to say anything, one from each class maybe, that'd be fine.
If the parents want to come up right in here real quickly and just take a small group picture, and then if you guys can kind of exit that way.
Yep.
And hopefully we got enough. Well, we're close to having enough room back there. But at any rate, thank you.
All right. Well, first off, I guess I'd just like to thank the Tompkins County Legislature for giving us this award. And then I'd like to thank all of the parents, the teachers, and of course all the friends of the ninth graders and the 10th graders. Really, because we couldn't do any of this alone. Our biggest help, I guess I could say, was Mrs. Spallone and Mr. Weick, our class officer advisors. And once again, thanks.
Hi. I just want to repeat what my brother said. Thank you so much for giving us this award. It was a great honor doing this service for the community, and we hope to continue our work towards breast cancer.
Now, I don't think Brian can get to the microphone, so I will say that there are some gifts to share, and he's got bags, so if
I'll do it out here.
They'll do it out there, so they head out that way. And thank you all very much.
They're all very antsy because we also have the art show. So they're literally moving from here onto our next function, which is this.
Barbara, thank you. Barbara, yeah. Your father would be very proud.
He is very proud.
And it's okay to call him Little Brian Robeson.
All right. Everybody reshuffle a little bit. All right. Thank you. Thank you all for your patience. Now, before we go any farther, we need to observe a moment of silence for Phil Shurtleff, who was a member of this body for many years, and one of our historians here can help us with which years exactly. Also the father of our own department, of head of our Department of Emergency Response, Lee Shurtleff. Phil passed away last week after a long illness, and he will be missed, and we're very sorry for the family's loss. Frank, do you remember the dates offhand that Phil was?
Phil served from the mid-80s until 1993. We used to orchestrate an awful lot of particular items, and one of his favorite expressions was certainly during budget season, which Joel will express, will appreciate, is Phil used to occasionally come out with a bug dust when he wasn't happy with the outcome of a budget decision. But neat guy to work with, and Lee is following in his footsteps. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Frank and Karen. And so I Googled it up and found out that September 1981 to 1993, Phil served on this board and did a stint as vice chair as well. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark.
Next, public privilege of the floor. And I have a number of sign-ups here. After, I will call the next person after the person speaking, so you can make your way up to the microphone. Please keep your remarks to 3 minutes. And Kathy's got the signs up here for 1 minute, and time is up. So please, so that we can hear everybody. And if you haven't signed up, you can, at the end, you can. I will ask if anybody wants to speak who hasn't signed up, and then you can come to the mic. So all is not lost if you didn't fill in a form. I'll start with Lisa Wright and followed by Ken Zesserson. Lisa, somebody find Lisa. Please state your name and what municipality you live in.
Hi, I'm Lisa Wright. I'm from Ithaca. I'm actually reading the notes from Michelle Bamberger, who can't be here today. She says that she strongly urges the legislators to pass this important resolution this evening. She says, "I grew up in a small town in South Jersey across the Delaware River. The town's main industry was and still is chemical refinery of oil and gas fuels. Our air smelled foul and the water tasted strange. As a child, I grew accustomed to the bad air and water. Our backyard was cut through by railroad tracks on which traveled freight cars bearing the refined chemicals. Each car was marked with a skull and crossbones and bearing the words poison, and keep away and dangerous. I came to Cornell 29 years ago to interview at the vet school. I was amazed by the beauty of the region, but most of all, the water. And this was city water, as I stayed at a bed and breakfast downtown. And, of course, the fresh air. I drove back home on Route 79 out of Ithaca thinking that if Cornell was foolish enough to accept me, then this is where I would go. They were foolish enough, and this is where I have lived ever since, except for sabbaticals at Oxford and Harvard. I think most people you will hear from tonight do not know what it is like to grow up in a highly polluted atmosphere. We are hardy creatures, and we can get used to anything. But do we really want to put ourselves, our children, and our grandchildren in a position to grow up as I have, knowing too well what contaminated air and water are like? This is what drove me to help draft the Cornell University Faculty Senate resolution urging a moratorium on fracking on university lands and encourage similar resolutions in the university and student assemblies. To write the letter requesting Peter Meinig, chairman of the Board of Trustees, to recuse himself from all decisions on the leasing of lands and gather over 100 signatures, and continues to drive me to join countless groups all across our state in their efforts to educate the public on this serious matter. We need hard science on the process and cumulative effects of slick water high-volume hydraulic fracturing for natural gas. As evidenced by past and more recent catastrophes all across our country, it is obvious that the energy industry cannot extract fossil fuels and make the profit they promised their shareholders. The big question is, will they continue to take shortcuts even after more regulations are in place? From everything I have read, they will be forced to, because safe extraction takes extra time and it is expensive to run a rig. When I go home and visit my dad, I realize that the air smells worse than it ever did. So bad that I cannot walk outside without holding my nose, and I don't dare to drink the water. He tells me it's all the same to him. And I realize that now I am accustomed to what we all should be, clean air and water. Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa. Ken Zesterson, followed by Mara Alper. I appreciate the support with applause, but it'd be... things will move a little quicker if we just have the speakers. Are there people in overflow?
There's quite a few people out there.
Okay, so if anybody out there also wants to speak later on, they certainly can also. So Mara Alper after Ken.
I'm Ken Zesterson. I'm the chair of the Ulysses Planning Board, and I'm also head of a drilling advisory board that the planning board that the town board asked us to create. And I'm happy to say Michelle Bamberger is part of that crew. I'm here to strongly urge you to pass the resolution, which I believe is before you, that I think you probably wrote, Martha. You must have had something to do with it. And I think it's a brilliant piece of work. It's very persuasive. I'd like to ask us all to step back. Everyone in this room has a rare opportunity. We can glimpse the future. Usually you can't do that. We can look around a corner. And we can look at Wyoming and Colorado and Texas and more uncomfortably close, Pennsylvania right now, where hydrofracking has been going on for more than a decade, and we can see what it does. We don't think this is what might happen here. We know this is what will happen here if we allow it to happen in New York State. For example, the resolution in question that you passed tonight, I sure hope you do, but how would you like to pass the following resolution, which was done by people in Susquehanna County about 80 miles away? They passed a resolution designating the county a recovery area. The resolution denotes significant poverty, unemployment, home foreclosures, and general distress in the entire county, and it makes the county eligible for various grants. You guys might well be passing something like this in 3, 4, 5 years if we allow hydrofracking to happen here. And another thing, just very quickly, we didn't really need another example of how horrible this could be for our society and our county and our families and our environment. But thanks to BP, we just got a great example in the Gulf of Mexico, where a $65 billion company clearly had total disregard for the environment, clearly had no plan whatsoever as to how to deal with a problem that might happen a mile below the the ocean, and now it has, and they're sitting around blinking stupidly while 200,000 gallons of oil gush into the Gulf of Mexico with untold consequences. It'll probably be decades before the health benefits alone are realized. I'm hoping we can avoid that. Okay. We in New York State, I believe, are on a proverbial Titanic. We're heading for an iceberg here. And I know that you all in this room work very hard, and you have a lot of other things to do. But I would submit that anything you do that doesn't have to do with preventing hydrofracking is literally like polishing the silverware on the Titanic. It doesn't matter. If we have hydrofracking here, everything else will be meaningless because we need water, we need air, and I urge you to pass this resolution tonight. Thank you very much.
Mara, and then Martha Ferger. Martha Ferger is after Mara.
I'm Mara Alper. I live in the town of Ithaca, and I'm here as a water advocate. I strongly support the gas drilling resolution from Tompkins County, and I thank you for your commitment to regulating hydrofracking in New York State. In your first resolution, I request that you insert the full phrase that's used earlier in the proposal, the EPA's study of the potential relationship between hydraulic fracturing and water resources. It's important to reemphasize the potential severe harm to our drinking water supply in that resolution. Water is a resource we take for granted, especially here in the Finger Lakes region, where it has been incredibly abundant so far. But we can no longer take it for granted, not even here. Drinking water makes up less than 1% of all Earth's water, and we cannot live without it. We now use it up faster than the Earth can replenish it. We do not want our local water abundance to be exploited for profit. It is extremely short-sighted to continue to allow corporate exploitation of water, whether for bottling or hydrofracking. Now is the time to advocate strongly for water. I ask you to advocate in two areas. First, to make water a public trust in New York State. Water must be protected from exploitation, pollution, and depletion for the good of citizens of the county and the state. Second, to create a new permitting program for large-scale withdrawals of water and declare the water resource to be a public trust. Permitting needs local control within a state framework. There is a model for these actions in the state of Vermont. A number of us are going to be forming a citizens group to make water a public trust in New York State. We hope that you, the county, will support us in this. At the state level, Barbara Lipton's bill, A4614, would require drilling companies who have either contaminated or severely diminished public or private water supplies to restore or replace that supply. This is a good step. However, the reality is usually years of litigation with corporations, during which time our water would continue to be poisoned and depleted. This has happened in numerous locales around the country. For example, 10 years of litigation to try and stop Nestle's from bottling Great Lakes water in huge quantities. If water is a public trust, the protection of water is a required necessity rather than after-the-fact cleanup. So I propose that the initiative to make water a public trust be adopted by the Tompkins County Legislature this year. And also I propose that you consider taking your actions further by advocating for a ban on hydrofracking in New York State. Short-term profits cannot offset irreparable loss. If there's anybody in this room interested in working about making water public trust, contact me, Amara Alpert, Ithaca College. Thank you.
Thank you, Mara. Martha Ferger, and then Marnie Johnson.
I'm Martha Ferger from Dryden. I chair the gas drilling subcommittee of our county's Environmental Management Council. I would like to report that last week the council voted its support of the companion bills, which will come in your resolution tonight. I hope that you will support this document overwhelmingly. Let me assure you that I have carefully read all 10 whereases in the resolution, and including the 11 concerns listed in whereas number 5. I must say that I can't imagine a more succinct and accurate analysis of the history and present status of this very complex matter. Whoever put this document together should be congratulated on a very skillful job. Again, I hope that you will give this resolution your unanimous support. Thank you.
Thank you, Martha. Marnie Johnson and Nancy Spiro. Marnie Johnson.
I'm Marnie Johnson. Live in town of Ithaca, and I'm currently president of the League of Women Voters. I want to offer some thoughts in support of the resolution on safe drilling and mining for energy resources to be considered by you all tonight. The National League of Women Voters has long-standing positions concerning the protection and judicious use of our water resources, air quality, and care for land as the precious finite resources not to be misused or squandered. The resolution to be before you tonight outlines many concerns that should be carefully studied and addressed. It is incumbent upon us to act not only judiciously, but cautiously. A cautionary tale is unfolding in the Gulf at the moment. We all know about the fail-safe methods that have failed, the finger-pointing, and the environmental damage and likely other harm to the people there. There have been problems elsewhere with hydrofracking, horizontal gas drilling, we would never want to see here. Let's be sure this area can be as good a place to live for our children and generations to come as we now know it to be. Our state's governor and legislators have to know our concerns and act in our best interests, but it's up to our local legislator to make our concerns known to them clearly and emphatically. I hope you pass your resolution tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Marnie. Nancy Spiro, then Faye Gugakis.
Hi, I'm Nancy Spiro, and I live in Enfield, and I'm also voicing my support for the resolution to ban hydraulic fracturing pending further risk assessment. I grew up in Tompkins County. I own land in Enfield, and I hope to live out my days here not worrying about contamination of the air and the water and the land. I'm part of a group in Enfield called Enfield Neighbors for Safe Air and Water. Water is our most precious resource, and it must be protected. There are safer ways to extract gas, and the risks far outweigh the benefits. The gas has been there and is not going anywhere. Let's wait and find out if there are safe methods for withdrawing it or support the use of, in addition, support the use of alternative energy so we don't need to exploit this resource. We must continue to voice our opposition to the powers on the state level. All of New York State, not just New York City and Syracuse water supplies, must be protected.
Thank you, Faye. And Faye Gugakis and Bernie Hutchins.
Good evening, everyone. I'm here also to support the resolution, and everything that's written in it is enough to convince you to see the issue as the way it is, and that is to stop the drilling from coming to New York State. One thing, even though a lot of stuff will be repeated tonight and said to you by other people, what I wanted to say is that I watched 60 Minutes just the other day, and I don't know if any of you watched 60 Minutes, but that said it all to me. The individual who survived the wreck fire basically told us how the company did not pay attention. And that tells us what other companies have done. They blame the way the banks have done, the way companies usually do. It's somebody else's fault. We didn't do it. We hear that with the gas companies from all the meetings that I've been to. Okay, that's what I've heard. You have the landowners saying we're going to, you know, we want this to go forward, the ones that want it to go forward. And then you have the companies coming to all these public hearings saying it's safe, it's safe, it's safe. So this tragedy that has happened in the Gulf is a learning lesson. Unfortunately, it came at a time to help us, but it's not helping the people that it's affecting down there, the thousands of animals that are dying that don't know what's hit them, the livelihoods that who knows when the Gulf will come back where people could regain their lives again. So that will happen here, definitely will happen here. And we all know the same. It's the same problem. Unanswered questions, the technology not proving itself. So how could we have that technology come here? Now, the woman who spoke just a little while ago, before, about the trust, the water trust, that's a great idea. And I think we should definitely do that because we are a water state. Now, in closing, I have a couple suggestions in terms of who to send this to. We need to send it to President Obama and his staff. We need to send it to Charles Schumer and Kristen Gillibrand, our New York State senators. We need to send it to the New York State watershed, to New York City, to show the solidarity we have with them, and to Skinny Atlas. And we need to send it to Cornell University. I know this is going to be local news, but we want also to have it in their hands to say, this is something we're passing, hopefully we're passing. And you know, even though they're here, they need to hear from us. The other thing is, this energy will be 2 years worth of energy for the whole United States if it gets drilled. One of the things that I mourn every day, and I fought against the Bush administration and the Reagan administration, and Clinton wasn't very pure either, is that we lost a lot of time. And because we lost a lot of the time, we have to make up for it very fast. And that's a huge challenge. And the only way we can challenge that right now, make up for that time, is conservation,
okay,
is population growth. So even though we oppose this, we have to realize we have to have a quick alternative. And that quick alternative is that, along with, you know, clean technologies. But clean technologies are going to take a while to build up.
Faye, you need to wrap
up. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Bernie Hutchins and then Ellen Harrison.
Bernie Hutchins, 1016 Anshar Road. From about October of 2009, the county and or its agents have been manipulating Anshar Road property owners with what is now acknowledged to be an improper set of maps. At your last meeting, May 4th, 2010, Ms. Kiefer described these maps as out of date, a mistake, and as inappropriate. And as much as these words are not all part of the minutes of that meeting, which you have for approval of your agenda tonight, I submit below a verbatim transcript for the relevant comments during the F&I report for the record. Mr. Wood apparently claims that as long as the maps describe parcels accurately in the sense of a land survey, that they are valid for the purpose of eminent domain hearing. He is wrong on three counts. First, certain parcels or portions of maps were not even included in the taking list because the county did not take into account the Cottington Road decision. Secondly, accurate maps were needed in order for a property owner to defend against eminent domain. Mr. Wood told this legislature that one of the few ways a property owner could contest eminent domain was by showing that the proposed taking was not for a public purpose. Without an accurate construction diagram showing the proposed use, logic requires that there can be no claim of a public use. Incidentally, the other way Mr. Wood said eminent domain could be contested was by showing a procedural error. Thirdly, and even more egregious, a property owner seeing the county's widespread claim of a 25-foot right-of-way as a highway boundary by deed on an inappropriate map might well feel that it meant the county had produced its own highway deed, that the protest was not even possible. The use of inaccurate maps, apparently a knowing use, has violated the rights of the property owners since fall of 2009. Prior to that, during the eminent domain hearing, and continues as the clock ticks down on the determination and finding. Further, there seems to be a pass it now and fix it later notion afoot. John Lampman seems to feel it is acceptable to change the maps at a later time.
1 minute.
Yes, I understand. If he's relying on Section 205 of the New York State Eminent Domain Procedure Law, he should read it carefully. It says, only in the event that further study of field conditions warrants. Only clearly means not generally. Further study means something new. Field conditions means something, perhaps bedrock or something like that, not something in the courtroom. Warrant means you have to justify each instance. I urge the legislature not to pass a determination and finding until the past mistakes are remedied and until constitutional rights of the property owners to due process are restored. Thank you.
Thank you. Ellen Harrison, then Catherine Halton.
Hi.
Hi, my name is Ellen Harrison, and I'm here today representing a new organization. It's called FLEAST, and its mission is to provide a voice for landholders who leased mineral rights before Marcellus shale gas exploitation was known to threaten our land, air, water, and communities. We are now organizing to see what we can do. The methods that are required for the exploitation of shale gas were not what we all signed up for. We were told by the landsmen who came to see us that there was no threat to our water supply. We were told that it would be a mere 3 months of disturbance when drilling took place. We were told that they were going to be drilling anyway, we might as well sign on. We were not told the toxic chemicals would be injected into our lands. From our perspective, a ban on slick water, high volume hydrofracking at this time is critical. We need the time to figure out how to deal with this industry. The rush to go forward is terribly dangerous. So I hope that you will pass this resolution. And I was wondering whether a resolution also saying that you would not lease any county lands would also be something to add. Thank you.
Thank you, Ellen. Catherine Halton and then Adam Law.
Hello. My name is Catherine Halton. I'm on the Danby Town Board, and I'm chairing the task force in Danby on gas drilling. We've been reading and researching for about 2 years on the issue of gas drilling. Danby is one of the southernmost towns, as is Caroline and Newfield, and so we're feeling like we're going to be the first ones to deal with the issue. It feels more immediate, I think, to us than anyone else. And this organization, this task force that we organized, has been trying to understand the issue. We've studied the newspaper articles. We've read pro-industry publications, government documents, anything we can get our hands on, trying to educate ourselves and trying to help the residents of our community to understand. I feel like the technology of high-volume hydrofracking is very complex, and the results are not predictable, as we can see in places like Pennsylvania. The economics of hydrofracking are also very complex. The difficulty in our community is it would bring gain to a few people, possibly at the expense of the health and welfare of the rest of the community. So it's a difficult situation. And New York State does not currently have a tax the way some of the other states do, so the income to the state is not really clear either. The economy of extractive industries is a boom and bust economy, so there's a large influx of money and then there's a bust, and that's been pretty much consistent in all of the different places that they've done any kind of extractive industry. The water issue, other people have dealt with really well today, and I think everyone, when I was canvassing for town board and walking up and down the roads of Danby, every single person, no matter what level of understanding, was nervous about their water, and I think with good reason. Some of them understood more than others, but everyone was just worried about it. We are all on private wells in Danby. The other thing I just recently learned is that we have what's called unprotected aquifers in part of the lower part of Danby that's in the Susquehanna watershed. And that means that if there is contamination of groundwater, it can seep into the aquifer. And there really isn't anything you can do after that to remediate it. So we're pretty concerned about that. I really support this resolution, and I hope that people will pass it, and I hope that there will be more study, more time to understand the cumulative effects, to really understand the economic and cumulative effects as well as the health effects. I think we should wait. I think we should see what's happening in other places, and I'm looking forward to the results of the EPA study. So I hope you'll pass this resolution. Thank you.
Thank you, Catherine. Adam Law, then Catherine Wagner.
Good evening. I'm Adam Law. I'm a local physician. I am speaking as a physician, and one of the first ethical precepts that we learn at medical school is primum non nocere, first do no harm. And I'm going to hand out here the statement, which is called the precautionary principle, which is the environmental formulation which directly derives from this principle. I want to just quickly give you a case presentation, because that's what I do all day. A lady called Kathy Baer was working as a nurse in Durango at the Mercy Regional Medical Center when a gas field worker came in brought by his supervisor who had a headache after a spill of a Zeta flow, which was one of the chemical mixtures that are placed in high-volume hydrofracking. She didn't follow the usual rules and helped strip this guy, double-bagged his boots, which were soaked with a sickly-smelling substance, and then took him and showered him. Meanwhile, other workers felt sick, and they called a code orange, which meant that they shut down the emergency department because of a toxic spill and called in the hazmat group. The nurse had a headache afterwards, but 2 to 3 days later developed flu-like symptoms. A week later was admitted to the hospital in respiratory failure, liver failure, and was placed on the respirator for 72 hours. She survived. However, the physicians involved were not able to get information as to what was in ZetaFlow because the companies that made it, a company called Waterford, said this is proprietary, would lose our competitive edge. Halliburton prevented Kathy Bayer from going to the local gas drilling board to talk about this. This illustrates a very important principle, which is that these companies are not telling us what's going into the ground. Classical toxicology helps us understand that things can happen immediately, but as an endocrinologist, I know that things can happen not just in parts per billion, which is the toxic encounter that this person had, but also in parts per trillion, which is an incredibly small concentration, to the very delicate systems in the body which are involved in development, metabolism. And consequently, even if we think that the contamination of our water by spills and other ways from this process is going to cause harm in parts per billion, once you see it in such low dilutions causing problems 10 to 20 years later, which are far more difficult to ascertain compared to this story with Kathy Bayer, I think we should all realize that we need to have a pause. And the precautionary principle states, when an activity raises threats of harm to human health or the environment, precautionary measures should be taken, even if some cause and effect relationships are not fully established scientifically. In this context, the proponent of an activity rather than the public should bear the burden of proof. The process of applying the precautionary principle must be open, informed, and democratic, and must include potentially affected parties. It must also involve an examination of the full range of alternatives, including no action. I think that the motion on the floor today strongly agrees with this precautionary principle.
Thank you. Catherine Wagner, then John Spence. John Spence is next.
I'm Catherine Wagner. I'm from the town of Dryden, and I strongly urge the board to pass the resolution. I'm currently the chair of the Natural Resources Committee of the for the local League of Women Voters. And in this role, we've been looking at the whole issue of gas drilling and other drilling and mining activities. And Marnie Johnson already mentioned that the National League has many, many positions concerning preserving the environment. There's one particular position that tends to jump out at me, too, that it states that the land and its resources should be preserved and not simply seen as a commodity. And I think this is quite relevant to the issue that we're thinking about. In the process of working on this project, I've been talking to League members around the country, and many of them are in states where this has already been going on. So, for instance, down in Arkansas, one of a League member who's been working on it has told me that they're experiencing seismic activities that are quite problematic, that she knows a number of people who can't even give their homes away. That's how bad it is there. A League member in Wyoming was describing to me how there's an area where you used to be able to see clearly for 60 miles, and now it's frequently filled with smog. Pennsylvania, we know what's been happening there. There's been lots and lots of things, of course, on the Shale Shock website, things about, for instance, the trucks running into school buses, as well as the water and air pollution problems. One thing that the league down there has been looking into is at the economic end of things, that they find that the workers that are coming in, the transient workers, are first of all filling up motel spaces, so that's affecting the tourism industry. They're also moving into the low-income housing, and so they're taking a lot of housing away from people who really need it. And so these issues, in addition to the environmental issues, are things that we really need to be looking at. This is a very complex issue, and I think we really need to slow down, look at it carefully before any decisions are made to go ahead. Hopefully, I mean, I would like to see no drilling going on, but at minimum, we need to slow down, do more careful analyses. I'm very concerned about the way the DEC seems to be using a divide-and-conquer strategy to separate us from New York City because we have a little less political clout. And I think our county really needs to be speaking loudly and clearly and asking that we be preserved in the same way that New York City is being preserved.
Thank you, Kate. John Spence and then Elmer Ewing. John Spence and then Elmer Ewing.
John Spence, a member or a longtime resident of Newfield and representing Better Housing for Tompkins County. Just wanted to take a brief moment to introduce one of the programs the county will be considering as they go through their budget process. And so to know a little bit more about what the home repair program is about. Tompkins County Home Repair Program assists low-income homeowners, seniors, and disabled folks of any age with home repairs, allowing these individuals to continue to live safely and independently within their own homes and avoid more costly alternatives. Health and safety issues and preventative maintenance concerns are the program's top priorities. The program provides the labor and the expertise while the client provides the funding for the needed materials. We partner with INHS, with Ithaca Neighborhood Housing Services, to cover the entire county, including the city of Ithaca. Better Housing maintains one full-time staff member out handling the repairs, and we have some administrative assistance. Funding for this for this year-round program comes from the county, from the United Way, and from the County Office of the Aging. COFA provides most of our referrals, so that's where a lot of the clients come from. COFA also helps us access funding to cover the costs of materials when that's beyond the client's reach. We approached the Community Foundation last year and received funding to create an emergency materials fund. For some people, a $90 storm door is beyond their reach. We set up the program with those funds to offer grants, and pleasantly were surprised when almost all of the clients opted for a repayment program, so we're able to offer this money at zero interest loan, so that money is being replenished. In 2009, we also applied for and got a member item, which helped us buy a van and some tools. Last year, we helped 90 households with about 110 different kinds of repairs. The sheet that I handed out gives a fairly thorough list of the kinds of repairs that we address. We currently have a waiting list of about 30 folks. That's about double of what it was last year. The average client would be a woman living alone, average age about 71 years old, and living on an income of $14,500. Letter from one such young lady. Dear Better Housing staff, I'm writing this small note to the Better Housing staff as a token of my appreciation and gratitude. I lost my husband a little over a year ago, and he had been working on a lot of repairs on our home, repairs that would not have been able to be finished if it were not for the efforts of your organization and staff. I truly want to thank you and all of your staff with all of my heart and pray that others like myself find ways of getting help from your organization. That is the home repair program, and if you have any questions, I'm easy to find. Thank you very much.
Thank you, John. Elmer Ewing, Chris McConkie.
I'm Elmer Ewing, live at 1520 Slaterville Road in the town of Ithaca. Those in favor of gas drilling say not to worry. We have a long history of drilling in New York, and the record's good. Those of us who worry anyway point out, one, there is no history of fracking horizontal gas wells in New York. No previous drilling in New York involved the huge injection of water and chemicals or the huge amounts of very contaminated wastewater that are involved in horizontal fracking. Two, horizontal fracking is only about a decade old anywhere, much too short a time to know what chemicals eventually may show up in aquifers if and when anybody spends the time and money to test for them. And three, even in the few years that horizontal fracking has been done in other states, there have been numerous cases of water and air pollution. Well water unfit to drink, fish kills in streams, trucks wrecked and spewing out chemicals, and air unfit to breathe because of smog or benzene. Well, say the proponents of drilling, any such problems have been human error. The technology is fine. People have just been careless in applying it. To which we respond, how do we eliminate human error? Who will operate the drilling rigs and drive the trucks and build the wastewater holding ponds and apply all the other wonderful technology? Won't they be humans, susceptible to human error, especially when tired and deprived of sleep? And by the way, who devised the technology? Androids? Thank you.
I think they have robots down in the Gulf. Chris McConkie, then John Ward.
Hi, I'm Chris McConkie from the town of Enfield. And I, too, would like to commend the drafting of this resolution. It really did a great job of summarizing the most heartfelt concerns of many residents. I also really like to see that you discuss the socioeconomic conditions, and I'm hoping that when you discuss this resolution, maybe you can go in a little bit of detail in terms of the kind of the studies that inform this resolution. In regards to who receives a copy of this resolution, I'd like to add Hillary Clinton, and I'll tell you why. She's Secretary of State. She's been touting how great shale gas technology is going to be and the leadership role the United States can have. But I recall that she came up to bat for residents who were very concerned about natural gas drilling in the Finger Lakes National Forest. And I think it would really be good for her to hear. I don't know what that means in the grand scheme of things and all the political machinations, but I think you really should send it to her. And lastly, I would like to say that my family, I think we have about 180 acres in a conservation easement. The value of our land is tied to conservation and preservation, not to mineral extraction. And when I look at compulsory integration, I look at it as a taking. And it really should be called what it is, which is eminent domain, which they have to show. And as the other gentleman here talked about eminent domain, you really need to talk about what that public good is, which relates to everything you've written here. So I'd like the legislature maybe to consider a resolution concerning compulsory integration, because it's not the same thing when you're going down, going 90 degrees precisely to fracture the shale over somebody's property. That's different from putting a bore down and incidentally drawing from a pool of gas or oil. It is a questionable legal construct, and I think the board might address it. So thank you.
John Ward and then Darlene Gold.
Hi, Martha. I'm John Ward. I'm the Director of Homeless Services for the Tompkins County Chapter of the American Red Cross. I'm also one of the co-coordinators of the Tompkins County Food Distribution Network, which applies to this body each year for funding for our 15 food pantries and one soup kitchen in Tompkins County. I'm actually here representing the Food Distribution Network today, and everything that I'm going to read to you, I've provided copies for you so that you can review more at your leisure. I'm here to bring attention to the Hunger in America 2010 study that was recently conducted by the Food Bank of the Southern Tier with regards to people's lack of food security and their need for services that our food distribution network provides for people in our county. This report is the first research study to capture the significant connection between the recent economic downturn and the increased need for emergency food assistance throughout our six-county region. The number of children and adults in need of food as a result of experiencing food insecurity have significantly increased. In the six counties served by the Food Bank of the Southern Tier, including Tompkins, 25% of clients are experiencing very low food security or hunger. Nearly 11,000 people received emergency food assistance each week from a food pantry, soup kitchen, or other agency served by the Food Bank of the Southern Tier. The methodology incorporated into the 2010 study includes data collected from February through June 2009. The Food Bank of the Southern Tier conducted face-to-face interviews with 276 people seeking emergency food at 38 sites throughout our county, including food pantries, soup kitchens, and other emergency feeding programs, as well as 144 agencies that provided food assistance were interviewed. Just a few little snapshots from that study in Tompkins County. 33% of the members of households are children under 18 years of age. 11% of the members of households are elderly. 42% of the households include at least one employed individual. 39% of clients report having to choose between paying for food and paying for utilities and heat assistance. 29% had to choose between paying for food, paying their rent or mortgage, and 35% had to choose between paying for food and paying for medicine or medical care. Clients with food insecurity and very low food security among all client households, 59% are food insecure. 25% of clients have very low food security. There's a lot of other statistics through this study, and I think it's really a landmark study conducted on the needs in this county and the six-county region that surrounds us. Our network of food pantries, soup kitchens, provide a much-needed service in this community. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Darlene Gold and then Linda Levine.
Good evening. I speak as part of an organized group of Hanshaw Road residents to inform the legislature of our objections to the proposed Hanshaw Road reconstruction project and to request your help. 67% of the homeowners on Hanshaw Road have submitted their objections to this project in letters to you on or before April 6, 2010. Yet since doing so, we have received no response. We ask for your help as our rights as citizens are not being upheld or respected. We are deeply distressed by this proposal and the unethical means the County Highway Division is using in its attempts to take our property and irrevocably alter our neighborhood. Taxpayers have the right to expect that their local government is run in a transparent and ethical manner and that the government officials and employees are acting in the best interest of the taxpayers. This quote from Stephen Hancock of the Division of Local Government Accountability applies here. The County Highway Division has not operated in a transparent or ethical manner, nor are they acting in the best interest of taxpayers. The county's proposal is for a $3.7 million project with 85% of the funds coming from the federal government. It's understandable that the county welcomes this infusion of funds. However, the County Highway Division has been deceptive with Hanshaw Road residents. First, the project is being presented as a neighborhood-friendly sidewalk plan. Yet in actuality, the Highway Division is attempting to turn Hanshaw Road into a major artery. The main intent of this project is not to add a sidewalk, because if it were, there is plenty of room on the roadway as it is right now to put in sidewalks with minimal damage to personal property, the neighborhood's feel, and the safety of that stretch of road. Instead, the sidewalk is the proverbial carrot, which distracts from the fact that the Highway Division's proposal includes a widening of the driving lanes, which will speed up traffic and have negative impacts to our neighborhood. The second deception is that while the county claims it intends to make our roads safer, the widening of traffic lanes has been shown to decrease safety. Do people want their children walking or riding their bikes along a 50-mile-per-hour driving lane? How will children cross the street? Widening the driving lanes will encourage increased speed and create a more dangerous roadway. This is a big, expensive project that is unwarranted. The county has failed to provide any evidence that such changes are necessary. But it is not too late. If they truly want to make Hanshaw Road safer, the Highway Division must revise its plans and omit the widening of travel lanes. If, however, the county simply wants to turn Hanshaw Road into a major artery, more like Route 79, it should be transparent in its actions and be prepared to compensate the residents for the significant loss of their property values and neighborhood quality. In closing, we are asking for the help of those whom we elected to represent us. You cannot allow the officials you supervise to treat us with contempt and to deny us our rights. We do have legal representation, but we are looking to you, our legislators, for your help. Thank you.
Linda Levine and Bruce Murray.
I am here to say that at this time, we do not know enough about the possible consequences of fracking. The bill that's proposed here is only common sense. Why would we risk everything prematurely when we have so much to lose? If we wait until we know enough to do it right, we can avoid the kind of catastrophe the world is now watching with such trepidation in the Gulf of Mexico. I'm also here to talk about bumper stickers. I have here a bumper sticker. Ithaca is 10 square miles surrounded by reality. There is a suggestion that the reality out there is the real reality. But perhaps our reality is the real reality, a reality informed by the better aspects of a good education and by our love of this quiet and beautiful land. Some of us were born to this place. Others never left after college or graduate school. Others chose to move here, found jobs and homes because they learned from others that it was so quiet and beautiful. I fall into the second category. I left Brooklyn at 16 to come to Cornell. That was 1963. My children were born into this environment. They grew up with pure, clean streams, beavers, great horned owls, hawks and hummingbirds, red fox and coyote, red efts and five species of frogs and wildflowers of every kind on the 90 acres of our own woods that we treasure. We have nurtured those woods and they have nurtured us. My son is a new resident of Ithaca, having chosen to return to live here after several years of earning high bucks in Manhattan. The pay here may be lousy, but the quality of life, priceless. My 90 acres are surrounded in large part by people who have signed away their rights to gas companies. Most of them are sorry they signed. Many have said that they were misled by the landsmen, and I think this is a major issue that our government should be addressing. All of them trusted that the government would protect them from the excesses of greed and the carelessness of the gas companies. Unless we abide by the logic of this proposal tonight and delay until we know more, our government will have violated that trust. I value the work of FLEAST in addressing this. In addition to awaiting future research, we need the proper infrastructure in New York State to oversee possible drilling. Our federal failure to properly oversee the rule of law in drilling in the Gulf is a horrific lesson, but one we can learn from. I personally stand the chance of my 90 acres being compulsorily integrated. So in addition to the dangers of ruining my environment, my property rights of those 90 acres would be violated by this compulsory taking of my land and its inherent natural beauty. The other bumper sticker, we all know, says Ithaca is gorgeous. Water and beauty surround us. Let's not risk them prematurely and frivolously. I urge you to pass this motion unanimously and send a message to our children and our grandchildren. Don't sell our birthright for a mess of porridge. Protect us from the excesses of greed.
Thank you, Linda. Bruce Murray, and then Amy Cohut. Bruce Murray? And Amy Cohut after Bruce.
First, let me thank you for your time and your service. I won't go into the hundreds of examples of fraudulent way that the gas companies sold these leases and coerced people into signing leases and everything else. What I will talk about is that the DEC does not have the manpower to oversee such a large industry. It was just brought to their attention just recently that some of the drilling chips in the brine from the PA wells was taken to landfills in New York, and they had no idea.
Could you get closer to the mic?
Use the mic.
Okay, and they had no idea of this. Also, the flowback fluid from the previous wells, the horizontal wells, is also toxic. And nowhere in New York State have the ability to clean the water up, let alone the high-volume fracking fluids. This has some in it. Some of our filter plants locally had accepted this water. When it got stopped, it got taken to Auburn. And this is like business as usual here. I have heard of no fines or anything else. Mr. Grannis, the commissioner, he has just recently passed more stringent standards for New York City watershed and the Syracuse watershed. I can't test my well water in the right fashion or afford to do it. I have a tributary that runs full length on 75 acres of property. It is the water source of Six Mile Creek, part of the water source for 35,000 Ithacans. Why does the watershed of New York and Syracuse need more protection than the watershed of Ithacans? On yesterday and Sunday, I spent about 6 hours driving all through Dimmock, Pennsylvania, and all over in Pennsylvania on different roads. I witnessed guardrails on the side of the road falling off of the road. I witnessed tanker trucks, probably without any exaggeration, 20 to 1 of passenger cars from 10 o'clock till about 2 o'clock yesterday afternoon. Many times watching these trucks go across the center line to avoid bad spots in the highway. This by no means is a small industry. So I would urge you, and as far as I'm concerned, tonight you are considering, you know, some of the most important and far-reaching legislation that we ever have to deal with, and I strongly urge you to pass this important resolution.
Thank you. Amy Cohut, and then Bill Padulka.
Hi, I'm Amy Cohut. I live in Caroline on Bald Hill, part of Brooktondale. I'm here as a member and a steering committee member of FLEAST and a member of Rouse, but I'm here speaking for myself and my neighbors tonight. I'm representing myself and Carol James. We have 33 acres. George and Rebecca Schillenbach with 30 acres. Dennis Kuhn and Rebecca Missel with 40 acres. And John Miller and Alyssa Evette with 96 acres. We are neighbors with Bruce Murray, who has 150, and so together that's just shy of 300 acres, and we all have contiguous land. We urge you to support the piece of legislation that you're looking at tonight. It seems it's very, very important, and I could repeat a lot of what has been said already, but what I'm thinking is that, gosh, we've been here an hour and a half already. There's still a lot of people here, and I bet you're thirsty. And when I came up the steps, I walked by one of the water fountains that said out of order. And I'm thinking, ooh, I'm thirsty. I bet they're thirsty. I could leave now after I'm done, but you can't. But it might be that in a couple of years you need to go to Syracuse to get some water, because it could say downstairs out of water instead of out of order. And I think that that's just so important. It's just every day that we need to think about that. We signed our leases in 2007 before hydrofracking was talked about or known. Our landsmen used fraudulent and misleading tactics. We were given brochures mentioning Trenton Blackwater, not Marcellus. We signed agreements when the law was 640-acre spacing units, not the 40 it is now. We fear for the safety of our resources, our water, our roads, air quality, noise, light, vistas, animals, and our general quality of life. Our property values stand to go down. The recent tragedies in the Gulf Coast, as has been presented already, are just such strong highlights for us. And we all drive. We use gas. We use oil. And so it's not that we're living in this unreality of a world. We know that it needs to happen. And I don't like that it comes from Iraq. I'd rather it came from somewhere nearby. And it has to be done in a good way, in a place that we can trust, in a way that we can trust. I want to close by saying that I was touched by the young people who were here earlier in the evening, and that they had come together to raise money for a cause that they believed in. it's quite possible in a few years that future 9th and 10th graders are going to need to raise money for our resources and for our water. And let's have them do something that's better. So please support this amendment. Thank you.
Thank you. Bill Padulka, then Judy Pierpont.
I'm Bill Padulka, Town of Caroline. For the past year and a half, I've been researching extensively the likely impacts of gas turbines in this region. I have to say I now know a lot more than I ever wanted to know about the process. And when I first heard about it, my gut reaction was that, you know, this just doesn't make sense for the Finger Lakes region. And having looked at it now for a year and a half, I know that's the case. I really applaud the legislature for taking up this issue tonight. There are a lot of people in Tompkins County who just are struggling to make ends meet or otherwise are too busy to have the energy or the time to look at this issue, and it's really important that you are proactively looking at this for them, and because it is their interest that you need to protect. They don't always have the time, energy, or empowerment to do so themselves. So I'm going to say something quickly myself, and then I have a brief statement to read from my wife. Basically, I'm going to talk a little bit about economics because we have a lot of stuff about the various environmental concerns. But the frequent claims of economic salvation through gas drilling are unfortunately just as overblown as the claims of not much oil could leak out of the deep drilling in the Gulf of Mexico. The reality is that where resource extraction has been pursued, the economic results are not favorable. In particular, there was a review paper that came out in the early, in 2002 or so, I believe, that reviewed a lot of studies of economic impacts across the country. And in only about 16% of the cases did resource extraction lead to an improvement in the unemployment rate. And about two-thirds of the cases, unemployment actually got worse. And in only about 20% of the cases did the poverty rate decline. And in nearly half the cases, the poverty rate actually got worse when, as a result of resource extraction. A recent study of various western counties focused exclusively on gas drilling, and the results are comparable to the results of the previous paper. So let's see, here's the one paper and then the other economic research paper, and I'm happy to provide those to the board if you'd like to see them. So as a summary of their findings, the authors of the review paper stated, until or unless future studies produce dramatically different findings, there appears to be no scientific basis for accepting the widespread, obvious assumption that mining will lead to economic improvement. I think the shale gas methods really need to change dramatically before they make sense here in Tompkins County. For my wife, I want to say that she says it's critically important that we request a ban on high volume hydraulic fracturing in New York pending further independent scientific study. That means funding, not funded or influenced by the industry. Furthermore, the research needs to demonstrate that gas extraction does not put our water, environment, health, and communities, either economically or socially, at risk. And the research needs to show that drilling would not have a net negative impact on the average resident. Long-term, cumulative, and indirect impacts should be addressed as well as the current ones. It's not clear whether the EPA study will meet these criteria because it is not clear yet will it be uninfluenced by industry, so therefore it's really good that the resolution in front of you says that it is only one of several studies that are ongoing. So she likes the wording of the resolution, and she thinks it's very important to make it clear that unless the studies actually demonstrate the complete safety and benefits of the average resident of drilling, in keeping with the precautionary principle that was mentioned earlier, the ban on HVHF should not be lifted in New York State. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bill. Judy Pierpont, and then Helen Slotje.
Hi, I'm Judy Pierpont from Dryden. I've been working with DRAC, Dryden Resource Awareness Coalition, for about the last year. I'm speaking for myself. I also would like to, and I'm here to support the resolution before you tonight, and also commend the comprehensiveness and the well-craftedness of this resolution. It's good. I think it's really important to let the state hear the message and give us that it's really important to get a couple more years to really study this issue, and it's important to pass the two the assembly and state bills that are supported by your resolution. Desperately need this time. We're not ready to high volume slick water hydrofracking technology is really an immature technology and not one that we should rush to impose on the land and the lives of the people of New York. We should learn from those who have experienced its ill effects already, our neighbors and friends from far away who've made extraordinary efforts to warn us so that we can avoid their plight. We need to listen to those who have experienced drilling in their communities and consider carefully what it would do to our water and air, our health and well-being, our communities and economy. Doing careful study and considering the multifaceted effects of this kind of drilling will take time. Our leaders in Albany must face the reality that they really don't know whether this project is in the best interest of this state or any state. The state's under a lot of budget, corporate, and landowner pressure to let this go ahead. But without having a clearer picture of the real benefits and real and possible damage, it would be foolish to proceed now. We absolutely need at least the 2 years of the EPA study plus 120 days to look into this process, determine the proper DEC regulation if it is to go forward, make sure adequate monitoring and safeguards can be put in place, assess the probable costs to municipalities to be recouped from the gas companies.
1 minute.
Determine where drilling will and will not be permitted and prepare our communities. To me, it is unthinkable that any civilized and free people would tolerate handing over their fates to corporations hungry for profits from their land without making sure that they will not be hurt by this activity and their homes and lands damaged. The corporations interested in being able to bring this kind of drilling into our neighborhoods knew quite well that their activity posed grave risks to air and water and went to great lengths to exempt drilling from the very federal environmental air and water laws that were enacted to protect citizens. Now it's in our hands to find out what risks we face and how we can protect ourselves. We're scrambling to do this. It
Please
takes
wrap
time,
up,
and we will need a lot more time for everyone to understand.
Thank you. Helen Slotche and Rebecca DeWitt.
Hi, my name is Helen Slotche. I'm from the town of Ithaca, and I'm here to support the resolution that you're considering tonight. The methane gas industry has advanced many rationales for why New York should immediately proceed with high-volume horizontal hydrofracking and not wait for the EPA study, among other things. Foremost among these is that we have nothing to worry about. In fact, industry tells us that those who question whether or not injecting a toxic brew into our land, past our aquifers, and into a poorly understood geological formation are merely fear-mongering. Yet, when industry discusses high-volume horizontal hydrofracking with its investors, we hear a much different story. Schlumberger, the largest fracking company, an international multi-billion dollar company, recently held a conference call with its investors. In that call, its CEO stated, when discussing shale gas production, and I quote, "At the moment, we're doing it by brute force and ignorance." As such, there seems to be no reason to not actually wait for the EPA to do its study. Perhaps industry will even learn something.
Rebecca DeWitt, and that's the last sign up we have. If there's anybody else who wants to speak after Rebecca, please make your way to the mic.
Hi, my name is Rebecca DeWitt, and I live in the town of Caroline. I'm a member of an actively growing group called Rouse, but I'm speaking on behalf of myself. I've been trying to think what I could say or add to this dialogue or this meeting tonight that hasn't already been said far more articulately than I could say. And people have brought up all kinds of issues. But I think the only thing that I would like to add is the plight of the individual homeowner. My husband and I bought our property in Caroline about 6 years ago. We had been here for several years, and we rented till we found just what we wanted, a little farm, 5 acres, a barn for my horses. We have cats, dogs, you know, not unlike many other people who live throughout the towns in Tompkins County. And we found out that The 20-acre parcel that we look out on daily, right out our back window, has been, the ground surface has been leased. And the parcel right across the road has also been leased. So, you know, this little cottage out in the country with really nice vistas and a peaceful place to have your family life faces the possibility of, I don't know how many well pads. I mean, 200-foot, you know, drill rigs. And they need 3 to 5 acres each. The land is flat. How many are they going to put out there? Even one would be an atrocity. Furthermore, our land is high. It's 1,800 feet and above sea level. And, you know, we have the curious situation where water drains down into the Susquehanna and also into the Cayuga watershed. So depending on which side of the property you're on. So, you know, having those rigs up there, and when I hear Dr. Law talk about, you know, parts per billion and parts per trillion, you know, what are we to do? I mean, our property value will go from what we purchased it at to probably nothing. So we don't feel like we have a whole lot of options. And I don't think I'm the only person who's facing this situation. I've talked to a lot of people who say, yeah, you know, people all around me have leased their property, and they don't know what they're going to do. So I thank you for listening, and I support, you know, this ban until we can study further wholeheartedly. You know, I think it's very obviously very, very risky to go forward now. We've seen too much in other states and other parts of the country. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Rebecca. Is there anyone else who'd like to address the legislature? Anyone else who hasn't signed up? Just state your name.
I signed up. Can I speak?
Okay.
I'm Carolyn Eberhard from Caroline. And I'm working with Fleece and Rouse, but I'm speaking for myself. I'm totally in support of the resolution. Thank you very much, Marty, for preparing it. It's excellent. I've read it. As a scientist, I support science-based decisions and obviously the precautionary principle that Adam referred to. As a landowner with a conservation easement on 145 acres surrounded by leases, I truly hope that compulsory integration doesn't happen in Tompkins County. Our prior experience with issues of gas storage, namely the NYSEG Seneca Lake storage project back in the 90s, has made us aware of the complex issues involved in addition to the drilling that has been thoroughly discussed, namely gas storage, which is of great economic benefit to the big oil and gas, and they will be taking land by eminent domain. Pipeline construction and maintenance is not trivial. Pesticides are involved, which may lead to contamination of the environment with endocrine disruptors. There's been demonstrated inadequate consideration of environmental factors by big oil. Natural gas is, in the end, a fossil fuel, and it is a gas, and it's explosive, it's dangerous. I was very impressed by the web report of the accident of Clean Energy in Middletown, Connecticut. This was a good company doing things right. Everything was fine. It was almost done. They were doing a routine purging of the gas lines. It blew up. It's a total loss, and 3 workers died. Finally, I would like to flash back to the previous issues that were brought up here. Mental health. There's a connection. I live a mile away from a gravel pit, which is a mental strain and a real detriment to our environment. And also, there's a connection between fracking fluid and breast cancer, that it may take 10 or 20 years, but we may well see that in the end.
Thank you very much for the resolution, and I hope you support it unanimously.
Thank you. Is there anyone else? Anyone else you want to speak? Come on up to the mic and state your name.
I'm Cyrus Umerger from Brooktondale. Since so many people have spoken so eloquently before me and made many of the points that I was going to make, I'm just going to say that I am here to support the resolution. I really hope you pass it. Thank you.
Anyone else? All right. Thank you all for your time and for coming and speaking to us. I'm going to tell you folks a little bit about what's coming up. Next, we'd like to hear from Jeff Evner from the Village of Groton, if he's still here. The special presentation tonight from the Probation Department has been rescheduled. We're going to do that in July. We have a couple resolutions to withdraw from the agenda, one to add, and I think when we get to it, to that part of the meeting, I think we will take this resolution first. Yes, we'll do legislative privilege at the floor. Is that what you're looking at?
I want to do the resolution now.
Do the resolution now? Well, let's... Okay, let's hear from the mayor of the Village of Groton first, and Jeff Evner is here.
Martha, can you tell us when you're voting on this?
Well, I was trying to go through that. What we'll do, I'm hearing from my colleagues that they'd like to just take the resolution next. I'd like to first give Mayor Evner 5 minutes to talk to the legislature. That's one of the things that we do is to have reports from municipal officials periodically, so he's here tonight, and then we'll take up the resolution if that's acceptable to the legislature. So, Jeff Evner, congratulations on your election this past fall, and if you can fight your way to the microphone, that'd be great. Welcome. Thank you very much for coming.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. Two things before I get started. Number one, the young gentleman earlier from the Groton School District, Donnie Evner, who came up with the idea, cousin of mine, very proud of him. He's done a great job. And second thing, I'm a graduate of Groton School too, but I graduated way after Brian Robinson did. So I just want to make that known to everybody. I have a short list of things that's going on in the village currently. And at the end, I'll take any questions, comments you may have regarding the Village of Groton. We just wrapped up our budget season for the 10-11 year, and like every municipality, local government, we're struggling as well. Initially, we were looking at a 20-25% tax levy increase, but with the great Board of Trustees we have and the village clerk, we were able to whittle it down to a 3% tax levy increase and a 2% tax rate increase. We certainly believe that reflects the village priorities of quality services at a reasonable rate. On a negative note, we're just begun a $4.2 million capital project on our wastewater treatment plant. So we're a direct in the target of the DEC standards. So we're in the midst of that. Unfortunately, we did not qualify for any stimulus funding regarding that project. A few communities around us did, so we're still scratching our heads on that one. Unfortunately for the taxpayer, to help support the funding of this project, we're looking at over a two-year time span, 160% increase in the sewer rate. We were very fortunate to receive very low interest funding from the Environmental Facilities Corporation and the U.S. Department of Agriculture, both two 38-year loans, which will secure the project for us. On a positive note, the village fortunately has a great industrial development park, and we recently were fortunate to have an industry called Plastisol come into the village. We have about a 20-acre park. I believe it's on the east side of the hill in the village, and It's been a blessing for us. We've been able to extend our utilities out there, and the message, you know, for businesses out there looking for a place to come, Groton is certainly open. And with our reasonable utilities, you know, please consider Groton. And last thing I want to mention is that this summer marks the 150th anniversary of the incorporation of the Village of Groton. We have a 3-day celebration beginning June 11th and culminating June 13th. Lee Shurtleff helped me craft this little note here. Throughout our history, Groton has had a strong manufacturing and entrepreneurial presence, which has had a substantial impact not only on our community, but the county overall. We believe the community is still suited for those endeavors, and we certainly believe that the village of Groton certainly complements the county's vision of economic development as well. So, does anybody have any questions, concerns about the village?
Thank you very much, Mayor.
You're welcome.
Pam?
Yeah, I just want to thank you for coming. I mean, it's wonderful to hear from somebody from Groton.
Thank you.
And I don't know whose idea it was. It's very exciting to hear what's going on there, and I really appreciate it.
You don't hear from me?
No, we hear often from you.
I had the great fortune to meet Frank over the weekend at Phil Shurtleff's calling hours, and he invited me down, and I certainly took him up on his offer.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank. Thank you, Brian. Anybody else? Well, thank you very much. And
thank you, everybody.
I hope you'll start attending TCOG meetings, Council of Government meetings.
We do send a representative.
Okay, right. It'd be great to have you there yourself. So, thanks so much for coming.
Thanks, everybody.
Okay.
Good job, Mayor.
And I see another town official, Dominic. Did you come here to talk about Caroline business?
Yes, I do. Thank you. Dominic Frangillo, council member, deputy town supervisor with the town of Caroline. And thank you all of you for your public service. I wanted to update you on a couple of things related to the resolution that you have before you regarding the high-volume hydrofracking. The town of Caroline, one of the things that we're concerned about as a small town is our assets, meaning our roads, as well as our environmental assets, cultural assets. We are doing two things. First, we're going through the process of looking at a local road preservation local law that would protect our town roads, which is our biggest assets that we have, from the high volume of truck traffic that would come through. We are aware of drilling that is going on in other states as well as other part of New York State, and that is putting severe stress on municipal roads. Another thing that we're looking at is going through the process of designating critical environmental areas. Under New York State law, local authorities have the power to designate resources, areas of the town that are of utmost importance, either culturally, environmentally, historically, that could be damaged through an industrial development. And so we're going through the process. We've actually sent out letters to every single household in our town and collected hundreds of responses back. People are very concerned about the impact of hydrofracking on their property. I also wanted to relay the concern that the town has around the impact on home rule of gas development. We have a number of laws on the books, including the stormwater law, which protects the quality of runoff and regulates the quality of runoff. According to New York State current law, or the way that it's being interpreted, the town is being told that we do not have authority to regulate a particular industry, only one particular industry, and that is the methane gas industry. And we unanimously passed a resolution in support of a bill in the State Assembly that would restore or clarify that we do have home rule over all and all activities, including this one particular one. And I think it's notable to say that it was unanimous. I personally wanted to commend the Tompkins County Planning Department for their outstanding and very thorough analysis and comments and questions that they raised on the GEIS. And I personally feel that those questions have not yet been answered. Those comments have not yet been addressed. I personally feel that it is appropriate, and I would advocate this if I were sitting here or if this was before my town, to consider a moratorium, given that the concerns that you entered to the state have not yet been addressed. Also, about a moratorium, we consider towns, municipalities consider moratoriums on wind power, on development, business development in a college town district. Why not have a moratorium around an activity which could potentially contaminate water for years to come? A couple of other quick things. I sit on the New York State Climate Action Plan process. The governor has issued a request to have a plan on his desk by the end of the year that would lead the state in cutting carbon emissions 80% by 2050. It's one of the most visionary and far out in terms of time horizon plans and most ambitious plans in the entire country. And as part of that process, and what I wanted to relate it to you because it relates to your resolution, is in the modeling that they are, the economic and environmental modeling that they are doing as a part of that process, says that in order for the state as a whole to meet an 80% reduction in greenhouse gases, the residential sector has to contribute zero carbon emissions in 2050. And that is a very loaded statement. That means in 40 years, I'll be 66, that all homes, on average, will contribute no carbon emissions. They will effectively be net energy zero. And so I think it's a very fitting question to ask whether hydrofracking, if allowed to continue, will allow the state to meet its goal. I also speak as a member, a former member of the Energy and Greenhouse Gas Emission Element to the Comprehensive Plan Steering Committee, and I have serious questions about whether allowing gas drilling here in Tompkins County would enable the county to meet its 80% by 2050 goal.
Can you wrap up, Dominic?
Yes, thank you. And lastly, I speak as a member of one of the, I guess, the future generation. And the question is, what good is economic development if you don't have water to drink or a good planet to put it on? And I was a member of, I went to Caroline Elementary School, and we did, we would go out and look at the crayfish and the crawfish in the creek, and I want future generations of Caroline Elementary School students to be able to have that same experience. So I would strongly urge you to consider supporting the resolution before you tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Dominic. Any questions for Dominic? Dooley?
Dominic?
Yes.
Excuse me. You said you're on the governor's group working on the climate action plan for New York State. Which part are you involved in?
I am on the integration panel as well as the residential commercial industrial group, so the technical working group for residential commercial industrial as well as the panel that will oversee putting all of the different pieces together.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thanks very much, Dominic. What I'd like to do then is postpone legislative privilege to the floor and my and the staff reports, and ask if there is are any resolutions to add to the agenda. Pam.
I would like to add Resolution Q. Shall I read the title? Or
yes.
Do you know what it is?
Let's read the title.
Okay. Calling on the governor and legislature of New York State to ban hydraulic fracturing pending further independent scientific assessments to determine the risks, greenhouse gas emissions, and social and economic costs associated with hydraulic fracturing, and in support of A-10490, and the Senate version is S-7592.
That's a motion to add that to the agenda tonight. Is there a second? Leslin seconds. We need 10 votes to add this to the agenda. It did go through committee, but it didn't get on the legislature's agenda in time to for our packets. So, is there any discussion, Dooley?
Do you have? Do we have a copy of it?
It should be in your red folders. Is that right?
On your desks.
On your desks.
Does it reflect the few changes that PDEQ?
PDEQ made a couple of changes.
Right. I would. Kathy and I talked about this before, mm-hmm. and when we I was. Going to propose the resolution after it's on the agenda, I was going to add make the changes okay. in the resolution.
Okay. So does everybody have a copy there? Ready to vote to add it? All in favor of adding the resolution to the agenda? Please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Okay, thank you. So we're going to adjust the rules now and just go ahead and, Pam, if you want to make the motion.
I'm going to make the motion, but before I make it, I want to, there were a few changes that were made to the resolution Q that you have before you.
Why don't you move it and we'll get a second.
First.
Get on the floor. Go ahead and move it and then
Well, actually, that isn't what Kathy suggested, but that, if you want me to do that, that's fine. I will move it. I can read it again if you'd like me to.
No, that's fine. Pat, seconds. Okay. So why don't you go ahead? Everybody's got their copy in front of them.
Okay, so but now moving it, I'm going to have to propose changes, right? I mean, we're going to have to move and have a motion to amend this. Is what now that we have it on the floor?
What you have, you can tell us what PDEC voted out. The written copy is, I think, what PDEC considered, and then PDEC at 5 o'clock made changes. So that's just the lack of time. Otherwise, we would have had it in a typed copy. So,
okay. Well, I don't. I think that's between you and the clerk of the legislature. Okay. I am going to add. First of all, I just want to say I want to thank Martha for just a tremendous amount of work that she did on this, and the leadership that she has offered us on this issue has been just unbelievable. And I really commend her for her hard work.
Thank
you. Here are the changes. In the first whereas, it's the first phrase there, it should include, it says, whereas on September 30th, 2009. That is an addition. It's the date.
Where?
First whereas.
After the and, right before the and, at the end of the sentence?
No, at the beginning. It says whereas, and you're adding on September 30th, 2009.
Thank you.
Okay? Then the next change is that the sixth whereas, I'm adding in on the second line of that whereas, the line begins heating the planet, and we're adding in according to the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. And then
I believe that should have parentheses 2007.
Well, yes. Mine doesn't have that, that's but that's good. All right. And then on the next to the last line for the on that whereas.
Which whereas are you talking about?
Six.
It's the one after the bulleted list.
Okay.
Okay, so on the sixth whereas there, this is the second correction in that whereas, in that paragraph. It's the next to the last line. It should add in, the line reads distribution and use, comma, natural gas is, and we're adding in likely not. Okay, so that's the six.
Nope, I haven't caught up to you yet.
Oh, sorry.
That's all right. Frank tells me there's another one besides this one that says not on the agenda.
Yeah, the one that was distributed that you...
It was on my desk. All right. Here it is. I'll catch up yet.
Okay. I'll wait for you, Kathy.
Okay.
So
this is the one that starts out after it says, whereas rigorous scientific investigations. Is that the one you just suggested changes to?
No, it's the one above that one, Kathy.
Okay.
Okay.
I see, because I was wondering, in the previous copy, it had the according to intergovernmental panel included. So
right.
You're suggesting
okay,
putting that back in. Now what?
Okay, so you put, did you find out, did you get that in according to the governmental, you have that one
got
in?
It.
Okay, so then two lines down below that, the line starts with distribution. So it's distribution and use, comma, natural gas is, and then adding in likely not.
Actually, just not the word likely?
Likely yeah. Not, you add them both in. Likely
not.
Oh, not is in there. Okay. Sorry, I'm reading off a copy that one looks as if it was added in. So likely is the word. Okay. And so the 10th whereas, which is on the second page at the top of the page.
Could you read what that whereas? I can't follow this, okay? Could you read what the amended one did?
Sure, I'd be happy to.
Thank you.
Whereas, in addition to these concerns, methane is 72 times more potent than carbon dioxide in heating the planet according to the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, and in parentheses, 2007. Therefore, when all greenhouse gas emissions related to hydrofracking are calculated, including emissions from extraction, distribution, and use, natural gas is likely not cleaner than other fossil fuels and may be more damaging than coal. Okay? Okay, so on the second page, it's the first whereas. It starts out, whereas in April 2010, it's that whereas, and you go to the one, two, three, the third line, and at the end of the sentence on water quality and public health, I believe we're adding in a whole phrase here, but I will read it. The moratorium will sunset 120 days after the issuance of a new EPA report, which is intended to allow the state agencies and state residents the opportunity to review and make use of the Environmental Protection Agency report. That's what was just added in.
You're going to have to read that again. Okay. I can't write that fast.
Okay, I'll read it again. Sorry, I'll slow down.
Again, I don't know which whereas you're talking about.
It's on the second page, Peter.
Yes, I have
the
second page.
It's the first whereas.
Okay.
On that page.
Okay.
Okay, and we're going down to the third line of that whereas. The third line of that whereas. And halfway across, there's a new sentence. After the word public health, there's a period. And then we're adding in the moratorium will sunset 120 days after the issuance of a new EPA report. You can spell that out if you'd like to. Comma, which is intended to allow the state agencies and state residents the opportunity to review and make use of the EPA report.
New report.
What?
New report.
Agency new report.
Of the new EPA report?
That's okay, too.
Yeah, it just says and make use of the Environmental Protection Agency new report. Okay, all right.
Hold on just a sec, Jim.
Is this written down somewhere?
Yeah, it's in the computer. We finished it at 20:25 after 5, so we didn't get copies.
Okay, so are we ready to move on here? We have one more change. And it's in what?
The first resolved. I think the one you had is the second.
I'm sorry. The change I have is in the second resolve.
It should be in the first.
We always put that in the first resolve. On recommendation of PNH.
Okay. On the first resolve, after it says resolved, then we add in, on recommendation of the Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee. That's the last change.
Okay, everybody got that? Apologies for not having it all written out. Thank you, Dooley, for your comments and suggestions and work on this. And thanks to PDEC for discussing it and putting it together. Dooley.
Reading this over, one other thing occurred to me which might be friendly to you all. It's in the sixth whereas, which is the whereas after the bulleted list. It says, in addition to these concerns, comma, methane. Not everybody knows that methane is the natural gas we're talking about. So I suggest inserting after methane, parenthesis, quote, natural, quote, gas, end parenthesis.
I'm sorry, this is in the sixth resolve?
Where? Right after the bulleted list. You mean quotes around the word natural?
Yes.
Okay. Parentheses, natural with quotes around it, and then and gas.
Yes, after methane.
That's friendly to me.
So inserting the word methane, putting quotes around natural.
Methane is there already. This is just giving an alternative name.
Maybe I'm in the wrong whereas.
Yeah,
no,
I'm the right
one. Okay. Therefore, when all greenhouse gas emissions related to hydrofracking are calculated, including emissions from extraction, distribution, use, natural gas is not cleaner. I don't see the word methane in this.
It's the first line of that whereas.
That's where we're making the change. Is that where we're making it?
Yeah.
Where the word methane appears.
Yes.
Okay,
right.
So then we're saying methane and then in quotes the word natural.
In parentheses, the word natural in quotes, followed by the word gas.
In parentheses, the word natural in
natural
quotes.
Gas.
And then the word gas is still inside the parentheses, or is it outside?
Inside.
Okay. Got it.
Is that friendly to the seconder? Was that Pat who seconded?
Did we have a second at a vote? Yeah. I don't think we did.
No, it was a friendly. It was asked to be a friendly amendment, and I said that I would have considered a friendly amendment.
And we voted on the adding.
I know, but
okay.
Kathy was
I misunderstood.
Okay. Other comments? Discussion? Dooley?
I have just one other thing that I would like to see in here, although the committee didn't act on it. I thought they had when the date got inserted in the first whereas on September 30th, I thought the expanded name for the official agency that issued the DEIS should be in there, and that is the New York State.
Could I request that you use the microphone, Dooley?
I'm trying to.
Well, I think you need to be closer.
It doesn't come closer. I'm as close as I can get. It's the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation, comma, Mineral Resources Division, comma, Bureau of Oil and Gas Regulation. So it's a very limited part of DEC that issued the EIS, because that's the bureau that all the comments went to.
So that's a suggestion. Is that friendly to the mover and seconder?
We didn't pass this at the PDAC. I would rather we didn't add anything else in here at this point. I think it's going to be too confusing to people.
In that case, I move to amend it with that language.
Is there,
just for
accuracy. Is there a second?
I can't hear what, I don't know what the amendment is.
The amendment is to take the near, to add, in the first whereas, it now says the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation, and then the addition is Mineral Resources Division, Bureau of Oil and Gas Regulation, because that is the division of DEC that issued the document.
Okay.
I don't see a second.
I second. That sounds all right.
Okay. Any discussion on that addition? All right, ready to vote? All in favor of...
What are we voting on?
We're voting at this point to add to the first whereas, after Department of Environmental Conservation, to add Mineral Resources Division, comma, Bureau of Oil and Gas Regulation. All in favor of the addition? Please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. That fails. Tie fails. Is there any other discussion of the main motion? Peter.
Yeah, I'm certainly in favor of saying that we shouldn't, in plain, simple words, that we should not engage in extensive use of whatever it is, slick water hydrofracking, until all of the issues have been studied and until the EPA has decided that this is a safe thing to do. But what worries me, I have not been involved in this. I've been away, so I have not been involved in any of the back and forth, and I'm reading this pretty much for the first time. I mean, this is a highly technical issue, and I feel extremely uncomfortable making technical statements in an area that I don't really understand. I'm certainly, as I say, I support the general principle, but there's a couple of things here that bother me about this. And the first is this whereas that was amended previously, the one that comes after the long list. Now, I'm no expert on this business, but I know that it is widely accepted that natural gas is considerably cleaner than other fossil fuels. I happen to know that Cornell University has proudly said that it has decreased their contamination of gases into the atmosphere by some 20, 30, 40%. I forget what the number is. And the way they did this was by substituting natural gas for other hydrocarbons and for coal. And I've heard this for years and years, that was an important thing to do. Now, it may be that everybody is wrong about this and that they all made a mistake in their calculations, but I don't think that this is a given. And I am very uncomfortable voting for this resolution, even though I'm certainly strongly in favor of the of having it studied by experts, not by us, but by experts, if there are lines in here that I simply don't feel comfortable supporting. And in particular, it's that one there. That one sticks out as a sore thumb because, it's in conflict with what I understand to be the generally accepted state of what the situation is by people who have studied this. So I'm concerned about that.
I can answer it, but I would like... Jim, did you have your hand up?
I did. Go ahead. But if you want to answer that question, go ahead.
I had another thing to say, but we can talk about that also.
Okay, and I might ask Ed if he'd like to add. I will say that it is true natural gas is cleaner burning. When you have the gas here and you have the oil and you have the coal, it's cleaner than the other fuels when you calculate emissions related to burning. When you calculate emissions related to distribution, extraction, that adds quite a bit more to, and I wish I had a graph here, which Bob Howeth, scientist at Cornell, has developed. I will tell you about it. When you add the extraction and emissions related to the trucking, to cleaning the wastewater, to everything else, that adds a considerable amount to the carbon footprint of the industry. However, the biggest concern is the amount of emissions related to the methane, the leaks throughout the system. The EPA's estimate is very hard, actually, to estimate how much leakage there is throughout the system, the extensive pipelines that transmit the gas. The EPA estimate is 1.5% leakage. There are a number of reasons to suspect that is very low, and I will tell you a brief story. One is that last year, the state of Texas, which has the Barnett Shale, very similar formation as the Marcellus Shale, and they've been drilling it like gangbusters. The state of Texas realized that they had a problem with the leaks in the system of methane. And as this says, it is well known that methane is much more potent in terms of carbon footprint than global warming than carbon dioxide. The state tried to cap emissions of the on pipelines at 5%. Not 1.5%, 5%. The industry fought that bitterly, saying they couldn't possibly get the leakage rates down to 5%. And of course, then Texas did not pass that bill. So clearly, the estimates of leakage of methane are higher than 5% in that particular state. The concern is that this has not been fully studied. Bob Howarth has received funding, and his work is starting a study of this. And we've been talking to our state representatives about this very issue. The concern is that the gas industry has been advertising very heavily that it is cleaner. What they really mean is cleaner burning, and I feel that it's critical that the public understands these issues. Okay, hold on. Peter, we're going to go back to Peter.
Well, then, can I comment on what you're commenting on?
I said I would go back to Peter, and Dooley had her hand up before, and Frank. So we'll get to everybody.
Well, you may be right, Martha. I'm just saying that this is so commonly stated.
That doesn't mean it's true.
It doesn't mean it's true, but it doesn't mean it's not true. I mean, I just find myself with some difficulty in saying, well, Bob Howarth and somebody else are right, and the whole thrust of what people have been talking about for years is wrong. That's what's being said by this paragraph. And I'm just not comfortable in taking those sources as contradictory of what I've known to be accepted. I understand what you're talking about, but it's just too little. If you want to put in something that put this in as a list that one ought to look at the life cycle, one ought to relook at how clean the gas was or something like that. But this statement is a very strong statement, which is very contradictory of what is commonly assumed to be true about it. So that's
okay,
all I'm, I
have. All right, we'll come back to our other issue. Let's deal with this one first. I got Dooley, then Frank, Jim, and Mike. And Ed, if there's anything left unsaid, it would be great, because this was raised in the resolution that we passed in December in our original comments on the DSGEIS. Okay, Dooley, Frank, Jim, and Mike.
Peter, first I call your attention to the word emerging issue. Peter?
What?
If you look at the language, it is described as an emerging issue. That is an accurate statement.
Actually, Dooley, no, that was in your version.
Well, it should be described as an emerging issue because that's what it is. It's one that it's just begun to be addressed. So if it were described as an emerging issue, I think that takes care of what you were saying. The other thing is greenhouse gas emissions is in the title of the resolution, and this is a good place to have that title underscored with this language. That's all.
Okay, Frank.
Thank you, Martha. Peter, ironically, we're absolutely on the same page. I suggest
first page, right?
Yeah.
That's not ironic. I'm sorry.
But no pun intended, right? The I had a concern about that same whereas, and it apparently is the same concern you had and are having. That's why I asked that the wording, according to the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change 2007, be added as a qualifier. And also, at the committee, the original wording that was suggested, after the words natural gas is, I asked to have inserted most likely, not cleaner. As further clarification, but in order to get it passed, I had to agree to drop the word most. So there was a little bit of compromising going on at the committee level. But I picked up partially the same concerns you did, and I go back to reading the actual language in there, and as Martha described, and I'll be very brief. This is the total calculation associated with
the extraction or with the issue, because in the whereas it says extraction, distribution, and use. So it's all inclusive of everything associated with it, not just the burning of the gas. And remember, this is a whereas. It's not a resolve. However, sometimes you have to reach a little bit of a compromise to get what you want passed.
Jim?
Which is what I did.
Thank you, Martha. Number one, I will support this resolution in any form that it happens to take, you know, within reason. I believe Peter is right. Fortunately, we live in a county full of experts, and experts agree and disagree. And Bob Howarth is someone I know, has wonderful perception about all this issue and knowledge. I'm sure somewhere else there's someone else who could try to counter the things that Bob is saying in a very scholarly way. What concerns me about this resolution is the fact, number one, the fact that it reminds me of a resolution last month that we worked on that we're doing here. And I'm going to make a request that if we're going to do committee of the whole work in the future, I would like a computer fixed to a screen and a projector so we could see the words that that person is the only one who has. And Pam, and you know, no disrespect to either one of you, we need to do this if we're going to be a committee of the whole. Otherwise, we need to go back to being a legislature with committees that make recommendations, et cetera.
Mike?
It's now beyond 20 minutes to 8. We've been on this topic for now 2 hours. We have the rest of the agenda to do. I think that the comments that were made in the audience, the wealth of comments were terrific. But at this point, I think beyond that, whatever we say is going to be beating a dead horse, and or a live horse, maybe I should say. But this, at this point, I would really like to call the question.
Is there a second on calling the question? Pam? All right, there's no debate on that. All in favor of ending debate, all in favor of calling the question, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Opposed? 1, 2, 3. Peter, you raise your hand. 3. Okay, 11-3, that passes. So it is time to vote on the main motion. All in favor of the resolution Q as amended here, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. Opposed? Peter, I can't tell when you vote.
I didn't vote.
You have to vote.
Then you're recorded in the affirmative.
No, I'm not approved. I don't want to be.
Well, then, that our rules are that if you don't vote, you're recorded in the affirmative. So
I oppose.
Opposed?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Sadly opposed.
Sadly opposed. All right. So that passes 13 to 1. Thank you very much. Thank you, members of the audience who've been here waiting. I think we'll take a 5-minute break, come back at 10 of 8. Thank you very much.